All righty. Yo. All right. We are live. This is John Fitch Knows Nothing. I am with author Jack Donovan. I'm Jack Donovan. And we're going to talk. Oh, no. My thing double played. Sorry about that. I don't know if you guys heard that. But yeah, sorry. I'm not good with the technology. But yeah, we are here today to talk about manly stuff and being manly. I think that is a good start for where we're going to go. But I'm going to play us in as some people come on to listen or make comments.
Cool.
All righty. We keep it classy. I fucked it up. I haven't been doing enough of these. I used to play every day and I was getting pretty good, but now I should be playing more with the quarantine, not less, but oh well, whatever. So yeah, Jack, I met you out in Orlando at 21con. How long have you been going out to those conventions?
I just actually watched the speech that I gave there last night. I guess they just finished editing it and they introduced me as having been there four times. So I guess that's the number.
Mm.
So,
yeah, it's funny. He's been doing those for a really long time and I've only heard about it in the last year or so.
Yeah. I didn't know what it was until I got invited. I got invited and I was like, what is this thing? And it seemed pretty positive. So I wanted to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of want to check out too. It's a weird thing to talk about betterment of men, like, you know, whether it's how they can be better or paths to take to be better or what it means to be a man. Like it's hard to get that anywhere outside of like a sport context.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say. And then even today, the sport context it's non-sexual, I guess. It's not gendered.
Right, yeah. Right. I always kind of feel bad for that, because I'm a bigger guy, so I don't get paired with girls usually when I do martial arts stuff.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel bad for that little guy who's like always getting paired with girls because he's just there to like rise up. You know, he's not there to get pushed down by a girl.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of sucks.
Yeah, it happens though. And yep. I've seen a number of it sucks, but at the same time, it's kind of good because you see some small cocky guys come into the gym.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
And they get handled by the younger, the smaller girls. that was a common thing that happened at AKA back in the day was tough guys would come in and we'd make them spar with some of the girl boxers or kickboxers and they would stop coming in.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, skill goes a long way when it comes to violence.
Sure.
Yeah. One of the topics you talk about in your book is the idea of being good at being a man versus the idea of being a good man. And I think that's it's just a minor change in the wording, but it's a huge difference in the meaning.
Yeah, you know, and as we mentioned when you were on my podcast recently, I actually had internalized that from some anthropology that I had read probably in 2006. But it was just a quote that the guy used. But as I tried to work on the project of defining masculinity, that's a big stumbling block. Because masculinity is one thing. But you can be a really nice guy and a really good person, but that doesn't mean you're good at being a man. And so it becomes a different thing. And also, guys want to say, like, whoever they don't like or whoever did something they don't like is not a real man. And it makes the whole definition fall apart because it's, you know, and it distracts it from the important part.
Yeah. No, it's a very difficult conversation to have with people trying to talk about what defines a man or what a man should be. even the masculinity itself is constantly being redefined by women.
Well, yeah.
it's constantly being redefined by women and men who are trying to sleep with those women.
100%. Yeah. Like people always ask you about the toxic masculinity thing and what that is. And I'm like, that's just made up stuff. That's just a made up phrase.
You know? There was a chart that I'd seen somewhere that it listed the positive and negative attributes of masculinity and femininity. And I thought that was a good breakdown, because they're just entities that complement each other, but there's negative aspects of both.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, you can go too far, you know, in one direction, mm-hmm. and, you know, yeah. get out of control. And I actually have a thing that I wrote today, cause you know, we're in a weird time in yeah. the world right now.
Somebody hit the reset button.
Yeah. And you know, it could be really good for men, because all of a sudden people could be thinking, hey, if this got a lot worse, I might need a bunch of guys around, cause this isn't going to be solved with like words.
Nope.
So
spreadsheets.
It's good on that, but there's also a thing that, you know, men are really easily spun up into a violent panic.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's a negative part. And I'm a little concerned right now, you know, like in the movies where there's a standoff and two sides are de-escalating,
mm-hmm.
and then some idiot fires their gun in the back, and then yep. everybody starts firing.
Yep.
It's kind of like that right now. Like yeah. Somebody could do something stupid.
I feel like when I'm out at the stores, there's that mm-hmm. type of tension.
Yeah.
Like if something just popped off right now, everybody's going to freak out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's not a good feeling.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully everybody's been pretty smart so far, but I was just talking to a guy in South Africa today. And apparently they're under actual like martial law, and yeah. You can't buy alcohol.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I feel like that's when America starts losing their shit. When you cut the alcohol and the marijuana, people yeah. are going to start no tobacco, no alcohol, no marijuana, no fast food.
Yeah.
People are going to start getting crazy.
Well, I think they would probably want them on the marijuana. I would think that would be like actually a positive yeah. thing, you know. But then again, it's kind of a lung thing, so that gets a 50-50.
Well, if they want half the population to die off or whatever that conspiracy theory is.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
But these times bring up a kind of a good segue to kind of one of the questions I had was
cool.
The hobbies that a lot of adult males, I don't know if we call them men, but adult males have these days, they're not the hobbies that, you know, our fathers or grandfathers had. And that's something I just recently started thinking about, was like, what were the things that my dad and his friends and his dad and grandfather, what did they do, my uncles and stuff, for fun? And thinking back to that, like they like did woodworking, they shot guns, you know, carved stuff, you know, they did things that they produced something or learned a skill.
Sure.
You know, like nowadays it's kids, parents, their fathers play video games.
Right.
That's, I don't know. That's one of the feminizations of the modern living, I think. Is taking, I don't know, we don't take pleasure in the things that are hard or are gonna move us forward so much anymore, rather than just kind of masturbating.
Yeah. It's better. It's always better to learn some kind of skill. I mean, that's, you know, like, that's why I like have a martial arts component into whatever I do, rather mm-hmm. than just like CrossFit. Like I could get really shredded just doing CrossFit, but I'm only mm-hmm. learning how to exercise.
Yeah.
I could be learning how to punch people and that'd be better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, at least it's a skill. It's like, it's yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I always liked that better. And I think, yeah, it's always better to be using your time doing something. And it's across the board, because a lot of America is still America.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of guys who are still hunting and teaching their kids to hunt, and,
yeah.
and, that's, you know, that's out there and all that kind of stuff is happening. I mean, my feed on Instagram is full of dudes shooting bows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, I mean, obviously there's obviously the huge population that you're talking about too.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think like the, that part of the population doesn't get the spotlight. It's not glamorous enough, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, there are plenty of, what is that? What is that show? The Duck Call Guys?
Oh, yeah, yeah. there's plenty of that. I watched it, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's plenty of that.
I believe.
Yeah, Duck Dynasty. Yeah. That's about as much attention as that type of living gets. But
that's true.
No, there's plenty of people who do that. But I feel like, especially in big cities, it's harder to come by somebody who has a hobby that's an actual skill.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's harder to do those things from a big city. You know, like I've always, you know, until recently, I've always lived in bigger cities. And like, how would you even figure out how to go hunting unless you knew a guy?
That's true.
You know, it's actually
you can always. I mean, at least go shooting, a bow. There's places around you can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of cool that isn't it trendy to have like the axe throwing ranges now? That's kind of become a thing.
Now. Yeah, they have that now. That's one of the things I want to do. I think that I used to do that like in my backyard.
Yeah.
But you know, my dad would yell at me because he had an axe that he had to put a shorter handle on because he broke the other one or whatever. But it was perfect for throwing. great for a 10-year-old to throw it stuff.
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah, so do you think there's any hope for us if somebody will figure it out, but these bigger cities, because you are used to bigger cities. Well, what do you think is going to happen if, you know, worst case scenario happens with you know, the virus? And it might not even be like the sickness of the virus. It could be the economic fallout from everything shutting down.
Well, there's like, I've been listening to a lot of worst case scenarios recently, and the thing is that people, there's a lot of guys who are like doubling down on that kind of thing. And like they know what's going to happen. And I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen. I don't think that Trump in the Oval Office with the door shut and all the classified information that no one has access to has any idea what's going on. You just don't know because all the data from, you know, people are talking about, well, this is what happens after a giant economic crash. And this is what happens. And, but the data is what, from 1929?
Yeah.
You know, an entirely different economy, a timely different world.
Less connected.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is, the whole world's doing this right now. So, you know, it's not like one country's just having devalued currency.
Yeah.
Like all of them are, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, this is beyond my pay grade as far as that kind of stuff goes.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and so, it's beyond most guys' pay grade, so they should probably shut up.
Yeah. I've kind of stayed out of it a little bit because I'm collecting all the different conspiracy theories, but like, we don't fucking know.
No.
This has never happened on this level before. There's never been this many people connected financially. Never. Like, we have no idea what's going to happen next.
Yeah. So we're just going to, I mean, I think the best thing to do is just assume that we're not going to be begging for like pieces of bread in like 6 months. And just soldier on and be productive and whatever, because whatever's going to happen is going to happen without us. You know, it's.
Yeah. Make the best of it. But yeah, it's very, very likely that we, I don't know if the tanks come rolling down the streets because they don't want chaos. I was going over the scenario of they have those robot dogs. Like that's what they're gonna have. Is like they're gonna get used to those, the robots, by having the robot dogs come to our house and medical checks.
That's true. Like the way they do things in the modern world, although that might change, but you know, the way they do everything is, you know, if it has an innocuous female voice, you know, like then people will be like, okay, that's not so bad. Like,
sounds, I mean, that's nice.
It, you know, they're, you put you on a whole like weird going under martial law right now.
That's the thing, is as long as you say it nice, that's what lies a lot of people. As long as you say it nice, they're all right with it. That's one of the things I think is the funniest. I get the biggest kick out of Trump being president, because he's doing the same awful shit that a lot of the other presidents did too, but he doesn't have the tact. And I think it's great. I was like, so you're okay when the other guy did it. It's just, you don't like the way he said it.
Oh yeah. There's so much of that. Yeah, it's really kind of messed up. Like the way a lot of people are right now. It's like, I think there's a lot of people, I feel like they want people to die just so he can't be right about anything. Get out, which is really shitty. Yeah. You know,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's plenty not to like him about, but, I don't know. It's when people have been gasping and screaming for 4 years about him. It's just, I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
And this is like the worst thing that could happen is like, there's a huge global disaster going on and, you don't even want to listen to the critiques about the leader because they've been, you know, crying wolf for the last three and a half years or whatever.
Yeah. It's like, you'd be saying the same thing if none of this happened. So, like, I mean,
You sure it wasn't Russia? You sure Russia didn't have something to do with it?
Exactly.
Exactly. It's annoying. But yeah. And then that's, so this could be, and I think it's probably going to have to be a catalyst for the masculine renaissance that I think is coming. Mm-hmm. It's going to have to come. We have a major problem with people who just don't grow up. They don't ever grow up. They don't ever have to be responsible for themselves. The government has become mommy and daddy. Mommy and daddy will take care of them. Right. So there's just, I think there's no growing up these days. And I think this might be something that's going to really force a lot of people to grow up.
Yeah. I think that's my silver lining that I'm looking at with it. I think a lot of maybe, ridiculous culture might get turned down, like the volume on it, now, especially because everyone's going through this together. Like no one's going to want to hear about why you're a special victim and why this has happened to you.
Exactly.
You know, cause everybody's having the same thing.
Yeah.
So, shut up, you know, like, mm-hmm. like, it's like this whole city got bombed. Therefore no one's special, you know, like that kind of
thing. And no, there's a lot of the SJWs I think that are going to, really have a problem because nobody's going to listen to them.
Right. Which is good because no one should ever have listened to them.
Yes. In the first place.
It's like, no, you learned a bunch of stuff in school and now you got a job saying it on BuzzFeed. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's not based on real life experience. And I think, like you said, the masculine renaissance, I think, it could become more of a renaissance than we want it to be, maybe, but that's the worst case scenario. But the best case scenario, I think, is really that people have had some time to think about what's important, and that if things were twice as bad, say things are like pretty okay in 4 months, they've had time to think about what it would be if it was twice as bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, okay, if the next one came in and whooped out a lot of people, we really did have huge civil unrest and whatever, I might need some men around, you know, like, or I might need to be stronger. And there's a lot of people, I've heard of a lot of people, there are a lot of liberals buying guns. There's a lot of things that people are changing their mind about a lot of things real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
It kind of, reality, when you start to think you're better than reality or whatever, it kind of kicks you in the ass. You think you know what's going on. The simulation gets mixed up a little bit.
Yeah. I think the ancients called it hubris. That's when the gods punish you for being stupid.
That's this is 100% hubris for the SJW movement, I think.
Yeah.
People listening to the oversensitive screeches of a lot of people. And hopefully this is like the catalyst that like just shuts people up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it'll be, you know, like I said, assuming everybody has money, I think like a lot of the guys that I know and guys who run self-defense classes and guys who run, tactical firearms classes and guys who run survivalism classes and all those guys, I think they're looking at a boom if this all comes back together. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think people are going to realize, they need to be ready for next time because this kind of stuff's still going to keep happening.
Yeah. And, hopefully it'll help my self-defense classes and courses.
Right.
Right. You know, somebody attacks you and you got to fight for the toilet paper.
You got to rebrand to like Apocalypse Defense.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But no, that's so you talk a lot about, you know, like building gangs and like men mm-hmm. need a gang around them. So what you do, you know, you write books, what else do you do? Groups and gatherings and things to bring men together.
Well, me personally, I think more than anything, I facilitate and get people started. I mean, there are a lot of guys mm-hmm. all around the world who have gone out and realized that, you know, cause most modern men, you said they don't have, you know, manly hobbies. A lot of them don't even have friends.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of them don't even have a few guy friends that they could count on in any situation. And I think a lot of the guys have read my books and so forth over the years. And I get letters and stuff like, oh, I have some guys. I got a letter from an Orthodox priest in Texas who has his fire team ready to go. And this was like a month ago I got it. But I was like, that's pretty cool. Totally different guy than me, but whatever. You know, like I think just a lot of people realize that they need to have some men around them. And that, you know, having men around you makes you better generally as a man. It gives you a separate identity and it makes you push yourself a little harder.
Yeah, it's something that I've never really thought about because I've been in sports for so long and I've been surrounded by, you know, groups through that sport. So it's a problem for a lot of guys who, you know, especially after college, like making friends with somebody as an adult man.
Yeah, it's like, it's you have to put work into it. It's hard.
Like there's the man Louis C.K. I don't know if you ever watched his show, but Louis C.K. he's got this episode where he's in Florida and he meets a younger guy who's cool. He wants to hang out with him, but it's like he doesn't know how to make friends with somebody.
Right.
He's a 40-year-old guy and he thinks it's like gay and he doesn't want it to look gay. And
right. You don't want to come off weird. Yeah. Like, am I being creepy? Like. You know, like I did that. I mean, really, like there's only a couple guys in my town who like lift heavy and they're at the gym. And I'm like, you know, we've said hi and we talk back and forth. And like, you know, like, well, that's pretty much one of the only guys I'd probably want to be friends with, you know, but, you know, what do we have a mandate? What,
like, yeah, exactly.
How does that
romance.
Work? Yeah. Like unless we're working out together, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. So like I'm that place too. It's like, I'm used to having, people around the gym or whatever. So friends are easy. So like to make adult friends, it's a different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Completely.
Yeah. It's a different skill set.
That's the course right there. How to make friends as an adult male and not seem gay.
It really is. It's a thing
for sure.
You know, or how to start a men's group without coming off like a crazy little like power hungry weirdo. Cause that's a thing too. You know, like we could start a men's society and then we could all get together. Mm-hmm. We'll meet on Friday nights. You know, it becomes very, you know, also kind of problematic.
Yeah. So I want to get one of those blower suits, one of those big padded suits.
Yeah.
And I want to start a little like men's club where I attack people. Like, you got to fight for your life. We'll have cocktails and then I'll try to beat you up and you'll have to like defend yourself. I think that would be a big hit in Silicon Valley. I think people would enjoy.
Probably. Yeah.
I kicking me in the nuts. But we got to get have a group, social groups larger than, you know, only 10 or whatever. We got to make some money off of it.
Right. So it'll be a bit.
Oh yeah. So that's the next, what are the next things are you looking forward to? Because, you know, we're in the lockdown right now.
Right.
They're saying a few months. Are there any things that you're watching right now? Or are you just, you know, keeping it even till just keep things as they're going?
I mean, you know, I had basically shut down. I had a retail store here that I would ship out t-shirts and stuff from. And so I had a brand for a few years and I shut that down earlier this year because I was just like, I'm supposed to be writing books, not running out to the garage to ship packages. Yeah. So I just need to stop doing that. So, basically all I was supposed to do is sit around my house and, you know, write my book. So, mm-hmm. I'm working on my next book, so that's basically my job anyway. I had hired somebody to kind of keep tabs on my schedule, because it's easy to get distracted. There's lots of things to do. Could be doing other stuff and to keep me on task. And now it's like that's not even necessary because I have nowhere to go. And you know, that's I'm gonna sit down and work on my book because I don't have anything else to do. Yeah. So that's pretty positive.
Writing books is the world burns.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, I started saying that stay solar kind of became my motto over the past few years. And I think it's a good time to be saying that.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of worked into the message of the new book that I'm working on. And you know, it's cause you know, I've kind of shifted in a more positive direction. And so I think that's a lot of what people need is like, men need to like, This is the time you need to be a man and you need to be somebody who everybody can depend on and, you know, be a leader.
Yeah. You need to be able to look at the situation as like, well, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing you can like, just carry on. You might as well feel good inside or have fun or laugh at it, make a joke out of it. That's what I've been trying to do lately this past year or so is really, really make a joke out of most things.
Yeah.
I think they're spying on me and they stole that line in the Joker movie when he's like, you know, I thought my life was a tragedy, but then I realized it was a comedy.
Okay.
Yeah. Was it Ivan? I think Ivan's book.
Nine
Laws. I think he talks about, preposterousness or whatever.
Yeah.
So I went down a rabbit hole of preposterousness and how preposterous, you know, the existence of life is. So like, why wouldn't everything else that happens be preposterous? So when I really embraced that, like everything's funny now. Like the worst shit could happen. I'm just like hilarious. of course that happened right now.
Right. Perfect. Right. Yeah.
Why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't have that happened at this moment? But yeah, so yeah, it's like I've been looking at just like what's going on in China, what's going on in Italy, like how many people are dying. But I don't feel like there's really trustworthy like resources for that. So yeah, so you're like we don't really know. Like
way more
people could be dying or like nothing could be happening.
Well, the thing this morning that everybody's pushing about is that like the United States, I got more cases than anyone has reported.
Mm-hmm.
But we also had the longest lead time and the most tests and versus China, which we know is they don't give the world accurate information.
Yeah. Everybody, like how do we know what China has?
Yeah. Like, yeah. They like, oh, we didn't test anyone. We just threw them in a ditch when they died. Like they're kind of known for doing stuff like that. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not,
you can't really
accurate information. It seems like the Americans so far, I mean, at least from what I can see, aside from people just generally being stupid and walking around where they shouldn't, you know, and not really all being on the same page, you know, but a lot of people do seem like they're on the same page. And at least, you know, out where I live or whatever, I kind of watch the local feed of what's going on, the local Facebook page, which is usually terrible. But it's a lot of nurses and stuff and talking about what's going on. And here's what's, and we've had the first two cases out here and so forth and what they're doing. And, you know, everyone seems to be kind of doing what they think they need to do, you know, out here. So I just think, people are handling it pretty well, at least, you know, from what I can see, but obviously I can only see a small town version of it. I can't see what's going on in the cities.
We have a couple comments here. Conk says cheerful nihilism. Like he's talking about the idea of, you know, just the preposterousness of things. I mean, yes and no, because it's nihilism in the sense that nothing does really matter, but at the same time, everything matters because it's your life. It's yours.
Yeah.
So it does matter. Like your experience matters. It should matter to you at least. I don't know if nihilism is the proper term for that.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I have to look it up every time I come across it. I have to look it up again and really dig into the definition again.
Of nihilism.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Just, you know, like all the, you know, different, because there's always different schools of thought on things and whatever.
Yeah, that's true. And then there's a game warning here. He's saying this is a, what is this? 5G is frying the Chinese and Italians in New York City. Have you heard that rumor? Have you heard that conspiracy theory?
No, that's new. What's yeah, that?
That this is all, I don't know how 5G is responsible for it, but I haven't figured that part out, but yeah, where all of the sicknesses are the worst is where the 5G is. 5G towers for your cell phone.
Okay.
So I don't know how that translates. I don't know how 5G translates to respiratory disease or illness.
Well, they didn't want you to know.
Yeah.
That's why you can't figure it out.
Oh.
You know, and with the absurdity thing, I mean, who knows? That could be the thing. Be 5G. Humans were not meant to have information that fast.
I know. That's the other thing is there's a lot of conspiracies going on.
Yeah.
We're probably never going to know. Yeah, this is looking like, I don't know, man, because they keep saying they want to start the economy back up end of April, mm-hmm. but then at the same time, like it's a flu-like virus. There's no cure. And even if they do come up with a vaccine, there's a good chance it'll just mutate and be back next year anyways.
Right.
So there's not really many good projections of like what could be going on, what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, there's I've read some stuff this morning. I mean, the mean way to do it is just to let everyone out. And watch it burn through whatever 2 to 3 million people, mm-hmm. which is still a very small percentage of America. And the economy takes a smaller hit. Everyone goes back to work. Everything works out. A lot of people die horrible deaths. But, you know, it's over in a few months because everyone's either immune or, you know, that's one of the things I read this morning. Who knows? I'm not a scientist. I don't know how.
Yeah.
I had this guy, Piero San Giorgio, on my show. And, I mean, I met him maybe in 2012. And, I mean, he's a disaster guy. He's like the top survivalist author in Europe. And so he's been peak oil. It's going to fall apart. Everything's going to fall apart for a long time. And as long as I've known him. And I got to hang out with him in Poland last year. And then I had him on my show recently. And when that guy is telling me, no, I think America's going to buy their way out of this. And this isn't the one. Like that actually kind of makes me feel good because he's been saying it's time for a long time. And from his sources, and he wrote a whole book about it, like about surviving this kind of thing. And he has a lot of sources and so forth. And I mean, he's saying that, you know, it's going to suck, but it's not going to be, you know, just end times Mad Max kind of craziness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that actually kind of put me at ease because, you know, you hear like we're all hearing stuff from every direction about what could happen. And
It's impossible to really know like how much of the economy is going to go, you know, to the toilet, how much the American government can print more money to, you know, to keep it from bottoming the stuff from bottoming out. It's going to be interesting to see people lose jobs and not pay rent and not pay mortgages and what that for me is like what's going to happen there when, you know, when they start moving to kick people out of places because they can't pay rent or when they start trying to evict people from their homes.
Right. I mean, I guess it just matters how long it lasts. I know it everywhere is different. I think that Portland, at least, the city of Portland or some areas around there did a freeze on evictions. Like basically, like you're not allowed to evict people right now. Like, yeah. Basically, that's not how this is working out. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, things like
there's,
that.
There's like 90 know. Days mortgage relief or something like that in California.
Yeah, some stuff like that. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, yes, if people don't lose their houses, then, you know, other stuff will get figured out. The tricky thing will be, you know, there are a lot of people who are house poor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I'm really glad about right now. I you know, I live in a really small town, but my mortgage is $1,000 a month.
Mm.
Like, you know, like it's, there's nowhere I could pay rent that was even that, you know? Yeah. So, yeah. You know, but a lot of people were paying almost as much as they can afford for their house. So, I mean, that's going to where there's going to be some bumps because, you know, especially if they end up underwater and the house isn't worth as much anymore. Cause that's tricky too. Cause that, you know, that happened a lot, I think, right in like 2008 or whatever. Like,
oh yeah, I got burnt with that. Yeah.
Oh really?
Cause I wanted to buy, I was from Indiana and moving out to California. Like it was a shock, like paying that. And that was the early 2000s. So I was like, man, I want to get into a house as soon as I can, because I don't want to, it's stupid paying rent. It's dumb.
Right.
And I bought a place after the bubble pop, but it hadn't finished deflating. So okay. the prices dropped like 100,000, 150,000. I was like, oh wow, I'm gonna get this at a steal. And then it continued to drop like another 250,000. So yeah, well no, I was like 185 under at one point. Wow. So yeah, that was not the best situation. I stubbornly, you know, paid it until I was able to sell it off for a profit, like recently. I had it for more than 10 years or something.
Right.
$15,000 profit.
Yeah.
But I think it was still better than paying rent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's what when I bought this house, even they were like, cause it's like a manufactured home. So it's not ever going to get that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it becomes a fantastic place to live. It's not going to be worth a lot.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, worst thing happens. You just lived rent free. So for which paid for it, you live the rent free for, you know, X amount.
Or you buy a new property and you turn that into a rental.
Yeah. Something like that.
Or, man, there's people who have, you know, they're Airbnbs. They have a house that they have just for, renting to people through Airbnb.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. That was something I looked into a little bit too, is, like buy a condo and like, Huntington Beach or SoCal, and then pay somebody to manage it. And that's a business option sometime down the future, maybe.
Yeah, who knows?
So what other book are you working on currently?
Well, I'm working on, you know, a lot of people, I have this land out in out here, which is the only reason why I'm out here. I bought this land because I was part of a group and we were doing these kind of crazy pagan rituals, like Odinic kind of stuff. And so I've been doing that, and I actually really like doing that because that's kind of something more in my realm of talents, I guess.
Doing like the ceremonies?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not warrior class. I'm poet priest class. I mean, that's kind of what I do. And the visual aspect of it and whatever, and it was really interesting, and I've just always liked rituals and so forth, and so I got really into that, and so a lot of people started asking me about it and wanted me to write a book about that, and then I dug into it a little over time. The more I dug into it, the more I'm like, well, I don't really want it to be stuck in that frame where it's just, because it excludes a lot of people. You know, like if it's just, you know, Germanic, it becomes kind of very exclusive, and which is fine. It's not wrong.
Yeah. The ideas of rituals, I think, is fascinating in itself. We've been watching, you know, a lot of TV, obviously, watching Netflix, but there's like a lot of court things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the ritualization of the court process itself. Mm-hmm. You know, people putting on their clothes, their nice clothes, filing in, going through security, like how people talk. I mean, that itself is a ritual that isn't really even talked about.
Yeah. I mean, all those things, I mean, they lend it a certain air of authority.
Yeah.
You know, they, because it's done in a certain way. And I thought about that when I made that land, you know, when I started developing the land that I had out here. You know, I went to some like, you know, like Catholic churches, and I went to some Buddhist temples, and some like, because you go in those places and there's an atmosphere. Yeah. And you know that you're supposed to behave a certain way. And I'm like, how do I create that? You know, like, how do I create this feeling that you're supposed to go here and behave a certain way? And this thing is treated with reverence. And so that's just always been interesting to me, you know, and because that's, you know, that's a interesting kind of, I don't know, like, you know, social programming or whatever, and just psychology, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, it, yeah, falls back. I think everything falls under survival. That's your number one rule.
Yeah.
So even the development of patterns and rituals would be linked some way to survival. Like it created success somehow.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's my basic theory that I'm working with in this book is more or less that, you know, kind of the way I talked about the perimeter and the way of men as being, you know, that, you know, you have whatever is sacred to you is in the middle of that perimeter, and your job is to protect it. And that's what men have always done. And what's in the center of that also becomes your culture as well. You know, like that's everything, you know, everything you care about, all your myths, all your story about the words, your language, all of that is, you know, with those people. And so I just think that's a really great metaphor because everyone can picture it.
Yeah.
And in a lot of religions, you know, a lot of Indo-European religions and so forth, you know, there's a, you know, concept of sacred fire, you know, which is part of the whole thing as well. And we're kind of programmed into, like, if there's fire involved, it's kind of very spiritual for us, no matter what. I mean, people like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's the idea of control of chaos. You're controlling fire.
100%. It's that. It's exactly that. It's creating, well, you're controlling that space too. Like that's because the darkness around it is chaos. And you, when you create fire, you create light, and that lights up the darkness, and you can see what's going on in the light. But once you go out in the darkness, chaos.
Chaos. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's fascinating. And I think the whole purpose of ritual is because it creates that order.
Yeah.
It gives you a sense of, or even though it's not, like, it gives you a sense of order in the chaos.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a myth, all religion, all that. All that's 100%. For that. And now we use psychology to make it, because it makes us feel better, because we think we understand what's going on. Same thing. Science is kind of the same thing, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, I think that's great. That's, And then there's the aspect, the physical aspect of it. If you have order, if you feel like your life's in order, things around you are in order, you have less anxiety.
Yeah.
So if you have less anxiety, you have less cortisol, your testosterone's higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just better.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I really think, yeah, like, order is the defining thing that we care about creating.
Yeah. And it's funny though, because it's so important to us. We'll do so much to create that order. We'll even be blind to things. Right. Like a partner's behavior or a loved one's behavior, because like you just don't want to see it. Like,
right.
It's chaos in your order.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what all the conspiracy theorists are going to say right now, that like, you know, if we think that things are going to work out, it's just because we don't want to see the chaos in our order. You know,
it's true.
Yeah.
But the order doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There is no order anywhere. Because at the end of the day, we're still naked apes,
sure,
flying through space.
We're just doing the best we can.
Yeah, doing the best we can.
You know, we're making our little tools and, you know, cracking our, you know, whatever, eating our bananas.
Let's see. One of the questions here, Alba Mira is asking, "Hey Fitch, are local supermarket price gouging there too?" I have not noticed any price gouging here in San Jose. Have you noticed anything suspect as far as people overcharging?
No, not at all. Yeah.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's other than the tension that I can feel, like, everybody seems pretty fine. But yeah. that is a problem. I don't know where you're located at.
Yeah, I would think maybe if it was privately owned stuff, I don't think the big corporations are going to do that right now, but
it'd be probably a bad look.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already pretty bad look. I mean, how many of the super rich billionaires have like donated, you know, to get some masks to somebody? How many of Bernie Sanders' homes are open for use for hospital beds?
Good question.
You know, there's just a lot of people who've been, you know, kind of up on their little podiums and or whatever for a little while, and I wonder why what they're doing to help right now.
Yeah, I mostly see regular people doing stuff like that, like small businesses and stuff. I've seen a lot of t-shirt, you know, not t-shirt guys, but you know, people who make other stuff online switch over to making masks and stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that some small business people who are trying to make the mask and things to get out to people.
Yeah. I was going through my stuff this morning just because I used to be a tattoo artist. And so at some point I had a giant bin full of like the cloths that you drape people with.
Oh yeah.
Which is, you know, medical cloth or whatever. Yeah, like, and I was like, if I had a whole thing of that, I could make a whole bunch of masks. But I think I might have thrown it out this past year.
Oh.
Yep.
So here we got a question here. Conk says he wants to know if you've read The Sacred and the Profane.
Yes. It's great.
It's great.
That's one of my favorite. I read that as I was putting together a Vault Gang, the land that I have. And that was really defining book for it. I'm going to mess it up because I think he's like Romanian or something. Mircea Eliade, I believe is his name. And it's a really good book, Sacred and Profane. And the way he separates the world out, you know, it's whatever we hold sacred is, like I would say, is like in the fire. And that's what we care about. And everything further away from that is just the world. You know, it's not what we care about. So really, really good concepts in that book, actually.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else was I looking at here? Oh man, I totally just brain farted. I had a question and, I forgot. So your land, how much land did you buy up in Portland?
It's in Washington. Oh, and that's why I'm out here, because to get cheap land I had to go like 2 hours outside the city.
Okay.
But so I have 5 acres in Washington.
5 acres.
So it's not a ton. I mean, it was just as much as I could afford, but it's paid for, so that's good.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
No, I would love to when I make my first billion, I want to buy a lake, just a whole lake.
Just a
whole lake. Put my house up on the lake. Maybe put some relatives on the other side of the lake. But yeah, then I have my own fresh, clean water, my own fish.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing.
People always think that I live out on that land, though, but I don't.
You don't. You just have the land.
In town. I could. I have a cabin on there and I have like a kitchen, like when we have events and stuff with propane grills are out there and whatever, but there's no water or electricity. So I don't think it's even legal for me to live there, you know, by that county's rules.
Isn't that a trip too? Like you own the land.
Right.
It's paid for outright, but you can't live there because you don't have the right paperwork.
Exactly. Well, I mean, then there's sewage and like, what are you going to do with it? Actually, because I looked into that, and that was the tricky thing. And I think they did it to mess with people who have tiny houses. I wanted to set up, what is it called? The compost toilet.
Mm.
You know, so I could just build an outhouse and we'd have a compost toilet, because those are pretty clean, actually, and easy to run. Especially for a bunch of dudes that are only out there like, you know, once a month or whatever.
Yeah.
And I guess that's how Washington decided they were going to control the tiny house people or something. Because like, if you have a compost toilet, you have to have it inspected like 3 times a year. You have to have permits for it. It's like this whole ordeal. Mm. And I was like, I don't really want the government on my land, so I'll just not have that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we just have, you know, like if I have a big event, I just have a, you know, a portable toilet brought out. Bring it back out, you know. Yeah.
So you do the ritual events, like how often do you do them and how big are they?
Every so often. I find personally, we've done probably as many as 30 some people, but I think 20 just for me personally, because they all kind of want to talk to me and hang out and whatever. And once it gets beyond 20 people, then you're really not really connected with anybody anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have time to deal with everybody and give anyone attention. Mm-hmm. So, I said we probably had over 30 at an event before, but I like them to be around 20 or so. Mm-hmm. We're going to have one in May, but I'm guessing that's probably not happening at this point. Which is, you know, fine. Mm-hmm. So I used to do them every month with the group I was in when I bought the land, but now I'm just kind of I have a bunch of guys who are kind of my core group. Mm-hmm. And they come out, and those are the guys who I'm talking to right now on a regular basis and whatever. And, you know, those are kind of the cool group who are really into what I'm doing and what, this other guy, Clinton, is doing. He's kind of like my, mad sorcerer buddy, who speaks like a million dead languages and whatever. Mm-hmm. He's pretty neat.
So, where are you getting the blueprint for how to do the ceremonies, I guess.
Okay. Well, the original way that we were doing it when I first started was, I think, like I said, I came from a group, and so I was getting a blueprint from them. And then, they kind of had taken it from some people in, a lot of neo-paganism was really kind of created in the 70s because they don't have mm-hmm. records of how people used to do this stuff.
Yeah. And a lot of this stuff was destroyed when
Like
the Christians, the Catholics, and whoever came through.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's a culture of people who really didn't write a lot of stuff down for a long time. And so, there's a lot of lost material. And so they just kind of have to figure it out and take a guess. And so now, because I like the concept of ritual and so forth, it's the same thing in many ways, like how would you design a speech or whatever in a way that you want people to have a certain kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you make that happen? And so like, I'll read all kinds of different things and we'll kind of play with the format we've been using and move things around and like, well, if we want people to have this kind of experience, what do we want to have happen? Like I might start out with a meditation or so forth. There's, you know, just, you know, there are a lot of people doing different things like that all around the world, you know, right now. And mm-hmm. This is just kind of like me feeling the way through it. Like, and as I write this book, what I do in that will probably change a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it'll be about what I'm writing right now. So I'll have to make it all make sense, you know, mm-hmm. but I'm pulling from ideas that are really old, you know, cause a lot of things don't change. I mean, if you look at old cultures and so forth, mm-hmm. you know, like the warrior God is always a thunder God. Like that's over and over and over again. There's always like a father in the sky. That's always the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, you know, give them different names. They have different characteristics, but you're looking at the same kind of ideas.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like that. And that's kind of where I'm going now.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's where, regardless of where the human group was located, they all have similar stories about
exactly.
the divine. And that's all just a relation to human experience, like people being born, people dying, invaders coming, good decisions, bad decisions. It's all just part of the story.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And because my work is focused on men, you know, I'm going to focus on, well, what do I think that men need to get out of something spiritually? You know, and then women can figure out what they need to get out of it. They can do their own thing. That's not my business.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, because I'm focused.
They can do their yoga with goat yoga.
Yeah. Yeah. Knock yourself out. Go crazy. Mm. do that.
No, like I think that, no, I, honestly, like, as a part of men's like spirituality, I think you need to push yourself, beyond some limits.
Yeah.
Like for me, like cardio or some kind of training, martial training, pushing you, you need to be able to get to that point where you're like, I don't think I can go any further. Like you have to really believe that, but then you take another step. like there's got to be some form of that with the man and their spirituality.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's what they used to do with initiations and stuff. They were always some weird pain element involved in it, you know, like whether it's the kids getting eaten by fire ants or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always something like that. But, you know, like you can't really, you know, like, hey, pay me $50. You can come out to my land now. Have you eaten by fire ants? That's not really like,
yeah,
not a good sell. I think that men need to seek them out, that out maybe themselves, in like the experiences that you're talking mm-hmm. about and so forth.
Yeah.
Because you can't really provide that, but you know, I think that what I've found is what people are coming to for rituals are in many cases just kind of a reiteration of the ideas that they already have. You know, like they want to in a formalized concept. They want to have it in a sacred concept, all these things that they believe about strength and so forth. You know, and then yeah, go out and run the marathon or do the mm-hmm. thing, push yourself and push your limits, and then you know, this is kind of your mythological framework for that. Because even with training, because you want to have guys train sometime, and we've experimented with that over the years. And actually, for this one I was going to do in May, I was having a buddy of mine who's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. He was going to come out and do a t-shirt strangling workshop, like how to strangle somebody with their own t-shirt. Because he's a little bit of a hard ass, and he's done that before in his life a lot, I think. And he has a pretty good system for it, apparently. And he has a whole like hour-long class on it. And so we were going to do that as kind of our strength component of, you know, the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to involve things like that because, yeah, and also men need something to do because otherwise they're just sitting around drinking beer.
that is a problem. You need something to do. You need to learn a skill.
Exactly.
Violence, I think, is important.
Absolutely.
That physical limit, pushing your physical limit, I think I think that's a part of spirituality. And then
I agree.
Opening your mind up, I think some use of hallucinogens can be very helpful, I think, for a stronger mind.
Yeah.
It kind of pulls away the veil of life. And almost it's like the this quarantine situation is almost like a bad acid trip or something.
Bad trip.
The reality is being stripped away and you're seeing the bare bones of like what life is, and you're like, holy shit, like we don't need work, we don't need these giant cities, we don't need this system, you know, grinding us.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah. That could get weird. Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to like do mushrooms right now. That's not really the spot that I'm in.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if I got the COVID and they were taking me to put me on a respirator, give me the mushrooms, you know, like whatever.
One last ride.
Don't they give it to, isn't that kind of an experimental thing? Like they give it to people who are going to die, like, and it makes them a little more okay.
Yeah, with
it.
No, that's
there was a documentary really, on it in like Netflix or something, right?
Yeah, it's a really high success rate
on yeah.
people taking mushrooms and having a, you know, a threshold experience and yeah, being okay with death afterwards.
Yeah.
They also, it's a good way to quit addictions too.
Yeah.
I think is people would go and do a heavy mushroom dose and never smoke cigarettes again, which is, I think is pretty interesting too.
Yeah.
Disconnects you from that reality you created for yourself.
Yeah. I had the COVID do that for me. Cause I was, I'd smoked for years and years and then I quit like a decade ago.
Oh.
And then just recently over the past year, I've been goofing around like, oh, I think I'll have a cigarette. And I was doing that a little bit just recently. And then like, oh, mm-hmm. it mostly, it's like men in their 40s and 50s get it and then die a horrible death of like lung disease. And smoking helps you get it. Whoa. Okay. And so I had to be like, oh, yeah, no, we're done.
Yeah, we're done with
no,
that.
No, thanks. Anymore. Yeah, yep.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's the... Oh, it's it's going to be strange times. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, Conk is saying goat yoga is for noobs. It's all about polar bear yoga now.
That sounds very dangerous.
Conk is saying a microdosing LSD is also being trialed for anxiety, trauma, and addiction recovery.
Okay. I know a lot of actual special, like guys who get out of the military. Mm-hmm. That's been, that's been a big thing. I think mushrooms and so forth have been a big thing for them, helping them kind of readjust and figure things out.
Yeah. MAPS is an organization that does a lot of stuff with psychedelics, mm-hmm. and research on MDMA and stuff like that too.
Right.
So interesting. But yeah, I don't know about the microdosing, but I know when people, you know, take a heavy dose, that usually helps with the PTSD.
Yeah.
But that's like, man, it's like NLP on steroids, kind of, right? Because like, that's kind of what it is because you have these thought cycles in your head.
Right.
And every time you do experience something that's similar to a past experience, like that thing clicks on and it can affect how you behave. So like NLP teaches you to like find it and break it down and like reconstruct it into something new.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like the mushrooms and the acid, they kind of do that for you. They kind of force you into doing it.
Yeah.
They force you to stare at that loop that, you know, your mom telling you, oh, don't do that. Girls don't like that. So you don't talk to girls. You know, that loop, you know, gets broken down in your head by the chemicals, and you can get around that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, it just depends. I think with that kind of stuff too, you got to do that in a controlled environment a little mm-hmm. bit. Not with someone else controlling it, but with you controlling it. Because there are a lot of people who just do that stuff for parties and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't want to be in that state of mind when I'm like around a lot of people. That's a bad scene. Because then it's like people influence you and you could go in a different direction. And it's mm-hmm. That's could be very unproductive.
Well, we used to do this thing we called a mind fuck. And we would take mushrooms and we would go to the bar.
Uh-huh.
So we would see like how long we could deal with being in a public place with a bunch of drunk people.
Right.
Like act normal and not freak out. So it was like a game we would play. And there was times when we walk into the bar and, you know, do our IDs and we get in and my friends would just walk straight to the back of the bar and then go out the back door and walk home.
Right. Nope.
None. I'm out.
Yep. No, I could see that.
Yeah. But that's a different level of taking it to the limit.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of like a Hunter S. Thompson kind of, let's see if I can make it through life.
Make it through life. Exactly. Yeah. Let's see if I can make it through life and be famous and make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But no, I think that was probably a good influence as we had the, what was that? Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I think that was, what is that? 2000 or something. It came out late 90s.
Maybe. Yeah. Something like that.
Around the time. So that was, that was college time. So
yeah,
that was definitely an influence. Oh man. Okay. Well, we've run about an hour here. Do you have any other announcements or anything you'd like to bring up?
No, not really. Just like I said,
surviving and working,
and trying to couple up with stuff to post on Instagram, I guess.
Nice. Yeah. Exactly. We gotta find. I gotta create a new fitness workout today to post up.
Okay.
My quarantine fitness.
Yeah.
All right. That's good. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for being on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I finally finished the Way of Men. I'll look it up too, so people can get a look at it. Available on Amazon. Have your other book too.
Yeah, cool.
How much have you written?
I mean, a lot, but the main three are Becoming a Barbarian, The Way of Men, and A More Complete Beast.
Okay.
And so the three main ones.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting into the Barbarian book.
Cool. Well, it's a good time.
Yeah.
For the future. It's very tribal. I mean, there's parts of it I wish I would have taken more of my own advice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of those things. Is like I have a lot of good friends, but like my friends are a lot like me, and we're all over the place.
Right.
So that's like tricky that. Thing. Yeah, the like-minded core group that's in a close location, like that's a little bit harder.
It's really hard because especially if you're focused on, if you're hanging out with successful people and you're trying to be successful people right now, as of a month and a half ago, are all very, very, very mobile.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're all moving around the world and doing, because they're going wherever the thing that they want to do in life is, you know? So it does get tricky.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, hold on. We got some questions here. I want to answer these questions too. Cool. TJ asks, Jack, how did you get into talking about masculinity and anti-feminism?
Okay. Honestly, I probably would have considered myself a feminist like when I was like a kid, you know, when I was in college and art school and so forth. In fact, I know I did. Uh-huh. And then
you're a good boy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Good boy, yeah.
And well, I mean, it's just I believed a lot of the stuff that they were selling.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, I think I got to be about 30 and, you know, had a lot of real world experience and so forth and realized that I was missing something. Mm-hmm. And that maybe I needed to go back and reevaluate some of my choices and see what I'd missed as far as masculinity and so forth. I mean, I was a very different guy in my 20s than I am now. And so I just started exploring that for myself. And then it just has kind of become my thing. But I was always interested in gender and so forth. But yeah, I came at it from their side first. But I was reading about this stuff when I was 17. You know, that's...
Yeah, no, I think that's a very common thing. It's like you kind of knew when you're younger, but then you're told... You know, this is the way you're supposed to be. This is the way you're supposed to do things. And you kind of, you know, it's a lot of teachers, a lot of people above you telling you that. So you want to go along with it.
Yeah. I mean, I went to art school. So like I went to a division of the New School for Social Research. Mm. So I learned how to talk some Marxist narrative.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day.
Yeah, man. That's good. All right. Okay, so yeah, that's all for these questions. But yeah, thanks for coming on again. It was really good talking to you. Enjoy the book. I'll be reading some more books, and then hopefully we'll talk again sometime.
Awesome, man. I'd love to.
All right. Well, all take right. it easy. Cool. Check you later, guys. Good.